Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I'm getting up
soon in the morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about the many health benefits of vinegar from Sarah G. GreenMedInfo. Lots of things you can do with vinegar. Also, we're going to talk about physical activity, how it can help prevent lymphoma. That's important. We're also going to be listening to Dr. Elizabeth Warren, Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, Alan Grayson, in what I believe is one of the most important discussions you can ever hear. And it's all current. Plus, my guest in the second part of our program is Richard Heinberg. We're going to talk about what will our society look like as it is forced to migrate away from fossil fuels and confront more serious climate change and dwindling resources. All the low-hanging fruit for fossil fuels, it's been picked. So what would that mean? Also, if time permits, I want to show you how we're living in a bubble economy. It's all a lie. If you're wise, get out of the stock market. Do not buy a new home. It's a wrong time. You're going to get creamed if you do, no matter where it's at. You're going to be overpaying in a bubble like Manhattan, and you could lose a tremendous amount of equity if you're buying right now. Why? Because everything that they're doing is social, financial engineering. What does that mean? Well, it means that companies are actually not making money. They have huge losses, like General Electric. And they had a $13.6 billion decline in loss because of decline in revenues in the first quarter. And yet they're buying back $50 billion of their own shares. And that's in addition to almost $11 billion in actual buybacks last year. So if you're the average person, you don't understand what that means. I'll explain it. That all these companies are engaged in huge buybacks because it keeps the value of their stock up. There's less in the market. And so they're being prized based upon having good value stock, but it's not based upon real earnings. So I'll discuss that, because that shows you why you should not participate in the stock market, why you should protect yourself and get yourself into a different situation financially. Anyhow, we have a lot to share. Let's begin. I remember one of the very first things in New York City when I first came to this city. There was a little tiny health food store up on the Upper West Side, 101st and Broadway. And I lived on the Upper West Side in a tiny little one-room, I think it was a closet that they magically called a one-room apartment. It was about 200 square feet. Actually, it was less. It was so small, all I could get was a cot. And all my buddies at the time got a big kick out of coming over and seeing how could I live in a cot. So we had to socialize in the hallway, where there was a bathroom in the hallway of the building. And based upon my needs for hygiene, that didn't go over very well. But fortunately, I was able to survive it. And it was actually kind of fun. The energy was just spectacular. In any case, I'd go to this little health food store because it was the only one that served juice. And it was the same juice, apple and carrot. But this guy also said, "You want a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar in there?" I said, "Why?" "Because it's going to make it taste rather strange. Kind of almost like it's spoiled." He said, "Yeah, but it's good for you." And I said, "Why is it good for you?" And he said, "Well, because apple cider vinegar is one of nature's just great detoxifying agents." So he would sit and regale me every time I went in about apple juice. I could get an apple carrot juice with some apple cider vinegar for $2. Okay. So why should we all be interested in vinegar? Because vinegar is great if you're diabetic. It's anti-glycemic, meaning it can bring your blood sugar down, and that's a good thing. Also, it was used 5,000 years ago and even before. It's when you have unattended grape juice, you end up with vinegar. And then that can be used as a preservative. So why vinegar? Well, because vinegar means sour wine. And it's a byproduct of the fermenting process. And you can ferment apples, apple cider, berries, grapes, carbohydrates. And the chemistry is simple. Initially, yeast ferment the natural food sugars to alcohol. Then you have what is called acetic acid, bacteria, which is, it converts the alcohol to acetic acid. And then commercial vinegar is produced by either fast or slow fermentation processes. And for the quick method, the liquid is oxygenated by agitation. The bacteria culture is submerged, permitting rapid fermentation. The slow method, which is what the Japanese and the Chinese have historically done, and the people in the Mediterranean to make their wines, it takes much longer, and a bacteria grows on the surface of the liquid, and fermentation proceeds slowly over months. The longer the fermentation period allows for the accumulation of the non-toxic slime composed of yeast and acetic acid bacteria, then that is a healthier product. Hence, the longer the fermentation, the healthier the bacteria. Yeah, it's going to be tart. It's going to be pungent. Some of these ferments are hard to take. But there's actually a lot of minerals, amino acids, polyphenols, and non-volatile organic acids like citric acid, lactic acid, malic acid in there. These are all good for you. So what does it do? Well, it's a part of an overall program of health and hygiene. There's the anti-infective properties. We call Hippocrates in the 4th century the father of modern medicine. He was the first to recommend using vinegar for treating sores and ulcers. And there's a lot of good science now showing it's a disinfectant. In fact, you want to clean your mirrors, your windows, use apple cider vinegar. You want to clean mold, apple cider vinegar. Why? Because it has an antimicrobial quality. It's also good for cleaning wounds. And there are studies to show it will kill E. coli and also D. enterococcus. And it substantially reduces the growth of Staphylococcus aureus and Pseudomonas bacteria. So if you were to put a teaspoon of apple cider vinegar into coconut water, add in about 20 drops of bee propolis and 10 drops of wild oregano oil, dilute that into 16 ounces and then gargle that, or you're just killing all those staph and strep in your throat. You're killing Helicobacter E. pylori in your stomach, and you're killing yeast and candida in your intestine. It's just anti-infective. But for anyone in this audience who has someone who has cardiovascular problems, there's lots of good studies that will reduce blood pressure. We know a lot of people have high blood pressure, apple cider vinegar. Tablespoon in the morning, tablespoon in the afternoon. Now, a lot of people can't just use it. So fine, use it in a salad dressing. Let me give you a good salad dressing. Easy and quick to make and delicious. Take some raspberries, frozen or fresh. And of course, with fresh, you got to wash them in your hand and agitate them gently. And then you put them in your blender. Then put tablespoon of apple cider vinegar, tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, and a teaspoon of your favorite raw, unheated honey. A really good tasting honey that really pops the flavor is Tupelo honey. And for this, I'm not using Manuka because it's just too expensive and it's not needed. That's when you have a wound, a cut. That's when you have an infection in your gums, your throat, your intestines, then you take it internally. Otherwise, save that. So there you've got, now put a little pinch of Himalayan pink sea salt, some black pepper, and blend it. There's your salad dressing. Now, you can liquefy it a little more than that. You could put some water in there, and that's fine, depending upon how much salad dressing. Now, then you put your salad dressing into one of those little spritzers, just an empty bottle with a little spritzer on the top. And if you really want to do it in a cool way, you could do some reductions. I like to have about 20 different reductions. Like I'll have a basil reduction and or, let's say, a lemongrass reduction. And then you have that in a little bottle, and then you go to make a salad, you spray it. You give it three or four good spritzes, toss your salad. Now, that way the flavor, the aroma of what your reduction is, reduction of raspberry, reduction of basil, especially lemon basil or cinnamon basil, reduction of lemongrass, which is one of my favorites, it imparts that slight, subtle, but distinct taste to the salad. So you don't have to, you know, you don't have to drown your salad in a dressing. So anyhow, when you're using apple cider vinegar, you're helping your heart, you're lowering your blood pressure, you're lowering your cholesterol, you're lowering the very important parts of your low-density lipoprotein that could contribute to clogging of your arteries. So that's good. It also is anti-cancer. There are a lot of anti-tumor factors directly because of the acetic acid. So, and for diabetics, really good on your blood sugar. So that's one of the things I want people to pay attention to and to help themselves. Now, there's a really good study from the University of British Columbia that showed that if you exercise intensely on a regular basis, you lower your risk of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And that's what this study showed. And it was published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention, a major cancer journal of the American Association of Cancer Researchers. So once again, those of us who exercise, we make that big, big help. We have people all over the world listening right now, including in Iowa. So for all the listeners in Iowa, this is from the University of Iowa, and it says, swine farmers, that's pig farmers, are more likely to carry multi-drug-resistant Staphylococcus aureus than people without current swine exposure. The study published online in Clinical Infectious Disease is the largest prospective examination of S. aureus infection in a group of livestock workers worldwide. And by the way, I know the people in this audience may not know this, but S. aureus, it's a type of bacteria commonly found on the skin as well as in the noses and throats of people who work around animals. And about 30% of the U.S. population carries these bacteria. That's about 106 million people. Now, that can cause you some problems. It can cause soft tissue infections, and it can also cause serious infections. And then you end up needing to treat it, and you end up with MRSA, which is methicillin-resistant, tetracycline-resistant. Now, nothing's able to treat it. Of course, there are some things that can treat it, but nothing in orthodoxy. So what this says, here's the takeaway message. Historically, we said, well, it's really healthy being on a farm. Yes, it is. Especially when you're out in nature, year-round. Absolutely. And because you're in a bucolic environment and you're getting winds and breezes and pollens, it strengthens your immune system. It exposes you to a lot. Definitely does. But when you're around livestock, that livestock is stressed, especially under factory farms. That bacteria in their danders go up into the air and can be carried for miles in all directions. That then ends up in our noses, in our homes. You know, the air carries all this. And if you work in that environment, you're exposed to it. So you put yourself at risk. So I'm just letting you know that we've got to sooner or later start moving away from factory farms for a lot of reasons. But that's just one more. You make yourself susceptible to infections. I first spoke about acrylamides about 20 years ago. The acrylamides are chemicals that are created when you brown anything. A muffin, toast, a bagel. That's a really strong amount of acrylamides. Donut, French fries. That's acrylamides. And they're dangerous. They cause cancer. Here's the latest why you should be concerned. This is from the Danish Cancer Society Research Center in Copenhagen. Quote, we have determined that acrylamide consumption found with higher amounts of fried and grilled foods significantly increases the risk of breast cancer among women. The researchers followed 24,697 postmenopausal women as part of the Danish study for 4 years. And those women who had the most acrylamide in their hemoglobin had the most breast cancer. So, if you eat it when it's been browned and crisp, like a potato chip, you're increasing your risk of breast cancer. Now, imagine a hamburger, a grilled cheese sandwich, and a hot dog, and a pizza. They contain acrylamides in the crust, heterocyclic amines in the meat, and nitrates from both. Deadly combination that increases colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, and breast cancer, and uterine cancer. So there's a cost to pay. Also, from Florida Atlantic University, published in the Journal of Leukocyte Biology, pre-existing inflammation may promote the spread of cancer. Some of you will remember when I brought the 9 leading holistic cancer doctors in the world together for a conference in New York City, all-day conference. It was packed. We had 1,600 people there all day long, from noon until 8 at night, and then we went over to Hisei's restaurant, which is no longer there, over on 72nd, and it was packed because I treated the doctors, Burton from the Bahamas, Issels from Germany, Al-Qaeda from Panama, Florida, Brzezinski from Houston, Rivisi from New York, Livingston Wheeler from San Diego. We had all these people and others. What was interesting at that time was that the one person of all those who had the highest success rate of helping people with cancer was Joseph Issels. And he was very specific in what he said that night at dinner, though this was not a part of his talk in the afternoon. He said, the very first thing I do with any person who comes to see me with cancer is we do not work on the cancer. We work on eliminating local focal infections. More often than not, we find these in their mouth. They have rotted teeth, they have root canal, they have abscesses in the gum. So we yank the teeth and we clean up their mouth, and immediately we see an improvement in their immune response and their natural killer cell activity. Or if it's not their mouth, it's generally their gut. We help them with colonics, clean up their intestine. He said, but the key is if you do not reverse local focal infections, you will have a much more difficult time helping that person with cancer. And of course, everyone listened. No one did anything, but because they all had their own practices and they weren't about to change, unfortunately. But he was the most comprehensive, he and Virginia Livingston Wheeler. So now this is confirming that. This is what this is saying. Quote, the research we have done is striking in that we showed pre-existing inflammation, there's your local focal infections, may be one of the factors that accelerates metastasis to the inflamed site. Wow. They just discovered this, and he knew this decades ago. Joseph Issels. And by the way, I filmed that whole conference all day long. In the next 3 months, I'm going to ask for some interns. I'm on my way back to New York now. I'll be back. By the way, the Running and Walking Club will not be meeting this Sunday. I thought I could be back in time. It'll be next Sunday in Central Park at 90th and 5th. If you want to just come out and get yourself into shape or to train for the marathon, it's next Sunday, not this Sunday, because I'll be back in New York then. In any case, I'm going to try to find all those tapes and put them up on the website. Now, we're going to take a break and come back, and we've got a lot of people for you to listen to who have a lot to say that's important. Also, for the volunteers from our local sister station, WBAI, we have hundreds of premiums that have been paid for that are sitting just across New Jersey at a warehouse that no one in management seems to be able to get, and hence honor the people from the last fund drive. So would Jim Dingman, would Mitch Cohen, would some of you organize just a van, go over and pick these up and get them into the station and mailed out to the people before the next fund drive? This whole idea that the premiums don't count, you want to know why the station's flatlined? That's one of the primary reasons. We should be ahead of the curve, not behind it. And by the way, these have been paid for. So let's get the premiums to the people. And they've been sitting there for months. So, and our efforts to help the station and pay for all these premiums, so they're paid for, just sitting there. It's just nobody ever does anything. No one ever answers the phone and says, yeah, let's go do that. It's just, it's nuts. So call my office and speak with Luda, and they will give you the address, and you can go and pick them up, and people get their premiums. All right, and that would be a good thing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you. If you've just joined us, I'm Gary Nall. Last Saturday, I was asked to debate on behalf of the parents and concerned citizens of California for what was, in my opinion, an illegal, unconstitutional law that in effect would exclude any form of exemption on vaccines. You would have to vaccinate, with terrible punishments if you didn't. So I said, sure, I'll be happy to debate. The debate lasted 3 hours. Something interesting happened at the end of the first hour, though. I didn't know who I was debating. I didn't care. You know, bring them on. You know, we have truth on our side. And the debate was the most listened to program in the station's entire history. And this is the largest station in Northern California. It serves San Jose and Silicon Valley and San Francisco. Just today, we managed to get a copy of it. Now, I've now posted it on progressiveradionetwork.com. That's PRN.FM. That's PRN.FM or progressiveradionetwork.com. If you forget that, go to Gary Nall and you can get there. Download it and listen to it. Why? Because in all 50 states, they're trying to mandate the same identical legislation. This is a concerted effort by ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, and those people who would love to see us have more vaccines in our bodies that are both dangerous and useless. What they don't have is science. They don't have honesty. And it's important that you see the arguments that they make and my responses to them. It will help all of you activists become better aware of what you should say and what the research actually provides. So now you have that and you can listen to it. All right? Let's now hear from Alan Grayson. Very important what he has to say about the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
I'm Congressman Alan Grayson. I want to explain why the current debate about foreign trade is the key to a better future for you and everyone you care about. Trade is a simple concept. You sell me yours, and I'll sell you mine. At least that's the way it used to be. I can remember when our food, our clothing, our cars, our TVs, Our appliances and the homes we lived in all were made in America, proudly made in America. In the old days, the production worker who made an American refrigerator took his paycheck and paid the rent. His landlord went to a restaurant, ordered a good meal, and left a nice tip. The waiter who served the meal saved up, and he bought that refrigerator. That's how our economy worked, and that's how it thrived. Ordinary working people made enough money to afford a house, a car. They earned paid sick leave, health coverage, and a pension, and they could pay for their children's college education. And they didn't have to worry that they could lose all of that overnight. But that's not the way things are today. Today, that American production worker, that landlord, and that waiter are all out of work. We've lost 5 million American manufacturing jobs and maybe 15 million other jobs during the past 20 years. What happened 20 years ago to change that? To ruin the middle-class life that so many Americans enjoy? The North American Free Trade Agreement is what happened. NAFTA happened. Since NAFTA took over our lives, day after day, month after month, and year after year, Americans have bought trillions of dollars of goods and services produced by foreigners, but those foreigners have not bought an equal amount of goods and services produced by Americans. Not even close. In fact, these days, it's often hard just to find products that say, made in America. The difference between what we buy from them and what we sell to them, the trade deficit, has exploded. And that explosion has blasted the American middle class. Here are the numbers, and the numbers don't lie. For the past 14 years, our average annual trade deficit has been over half a trillion dollars. That's a deficit of more than $1,500 each and every year for every man, woman, and child in this country. This is not free trade. This is fake trade. I invite you to look back across history, all the way back to the Stone Age. I invite you to look all across planet Earth, that beautiful blue marble, all 193 nations, all seven continents. You will find that the 14 largest trade deficits in the history of mankind, all of them, are the U.S. trade deficits for the last 14 years. Here on the left was our trade balance between 1962 and 1992, before so-called free trade agreements. And here on the right, our trade balance since then. What sane person could look at these two charts and conclude that what America needs is more free trade? Today, we're creating millions, no, tens of millions of jobs in other countries with our purchasing power, while we're losing millions of jobs here in America because people in other countries are buying their own goods and services rather than ours. They're not creating jobs in America, but they're buying our assets, our stocks, our bonds, our mortgages, our homes, our farms, our coastlands, our big businesses, and our small businesses. Our debt to foreigners right now already totals more than $35,000 for every man, woman, and child in America. Already, 1/7 of all of the assets of our great nation, the result of 2 centuries of backbreaking labor and sacrifice, 1/7 of the assets in our nation are now owned, already owned, by foreigners. And ultimately, if we keep going the way we're going, they all will be. Because of fake trade, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And the end game? The end game is the end of America. Listen, we are in a deep, deep hole thanks to fake trade. A British minister once popularized what he referred to as the first law of holes. When you're in a hole, stop digging. Stop digging. We have to stop digging. The price tag already has reached $11 trillion, and it's rising by more than $1 billion every single day. The only ones who have benefited from this treachery are multinational corporations, and middle-class America has paid the price. It has to end, and it has to end now. But right now, the U.S. Trade Representative is seeking fast-track authority for trade agreements. That authority could prohibit congressional subcommittee hearings, subcommittee amendments, committee hearings, committee amendments, and amendments on the floor of the House. It could limit debate to 88 seconds for each member of the House. But that's not the deepest problem. The deepest problem is that it would put America deeper into that already very deep hole. It's the fast track to hell. That's why you have to direct your congressmen and your senators to vote against it. The U.S. Trade Representative also wants Congress to ratify giant new trade agreements, one with East Asia and one with Europe. This trade treachery would put our $30 an hour workers directly in head-to-head competition against workers in Vietnam and Brunei who are lucky to make 30 cents an hour. Free trade countries like that are free of health and safety rules and environmental protection, free of Social Security, pensions, and health care, free of child labor laws, free of the right to organize, and even free of the rules against slave labor. This trade treachery also would give special privileges to foreign corporations that neither American corporations nor any living, breathing human beings enjoy. It would set up special tribunals before the World Bank and the United Nations, populated by corporate lobbyists pretending to be judges, which could then award enforceable judgments against our federal, state, and local governments merely for enforcing our health, safety, and environmental laws. It would give away the sovereignty that our founding fathers fought and died for in exchange for nothing. But there is hope. Warren Buffett, the greatest investor of our lifetime, has offered a plan for liberating us from the trade deficit.
He would require importers to obtain certificates for the goods and services they sell us. The charges for those certificates could be used to increase Social Security and Medicare benefits, rebuild our roads and schools, and cut our taxes.
I support that plan, and I will be offering legislation to implement it. It is the light at the end of the tunnel for our economy. But for now, it's urgent that we prevent things from getting even worse. Write this number down, 202-224-3121. Call that number and you can reach your congressman and your senators. To send an email to them, go to www.house.gov/representatives/find and put in your zip code. Tell them no to fast track, no to new trade agreements, and yes to the Buffett plan to reduce the trade deficit. One more important thing. Sign up at tradetreachery.com so that we can keep you posted. And we'll let you know what else you can do to help. It's time to stop digging that hole any deeper. Let's fight back against this scheme that has robbed the American middle class now for decades. Let's fight it and let's defeat it right now while we still can. Let's put our workers back to work, earning a decent day's pay for a decent day's work. Let's heal our economy and heal our nation. Let's show our courage. Let's show our unity. Let's climb up out of that hole and let's raise ourselves up. And let's rebuild the American middle class. I'm Congressman Alan Grayson. If we work together, we can make America a paradise.
Let me give you that number for Congress, and I'm encouraging everyone in this audience to call as many times as you can. And you're not going to reach a congressperson, but you'll reach either their office number and leave a polite message, but firm, that you do not want to see fast track and you don't. We are against the entire treaty. Don't let them convince you that they're will modify some things you don't like. No, the whole treaty is bad. The number again is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. Let's be against the treaty in its entirety, but we've all got a call. Now, what's great about this audience is that every time there's been a call to action by the tens to hundreds of thousands, 140,000 plus calls and emails went to the governor's office and the legislature in Albany when they wanted to get mandatory vaccines, four of them for every healthcare worker. We stopped that. And under 24 hours, we stopped it. And 12 to 1,400 of us ended up in Albany protesting. So we can do this. Let's engage everyone in this audience, because remember, people in this audience are in every state, every city, every community. I just was told this morning, just this morning on my Facebook, was 3.3 million people this morning. All right? So we have numbers. We have staggering number of people who are committed to really taking on the corrupt Democrat and Republicans who are in office and sponsored by the media. So let's let them know we count. Okay? 202-224-3121. Send as many messages to them until they get the message. Now, I'm sure many of you have found it egregious when you hear that companies have broken the law, been fined, pay a penalty, the stock goes up, Wall Street is happy, everyone's happy, no one has a record, no one goes to jail. Frequently, they don't even have to admit they've done wrong. Isn't it time we stop this? Isn't it time that we insisted that we take away the charters of corporations and hold those people who make these decisions personally liable at a criminal level? If you do the crime, you do the time. Corporate America would fill every prison cell in America if you took everyone who's in prison out, and you should at least all the drug addicts and those of minor offenses, let them work within a community, do something constructive for themselves and their character and the community. We shouldn't be, our whole penal system is stupid and it's barbaric. Only those who have shown they cannot coexist in a society, the murderers, and those who do violence to others. But there's no one doing more violence than corporate America. So let's hold them accountable. But until we insist upon it, that won't happen. Here's Senator Elizabeth Warren letting us know why she's concerned.
Mr. President, I rise in support of the Truth and Settlements Act. This bipartisan legislation, which I introduced earlier today with my colleague from Oklahoma, Senator Lankford, the president sitting here, will help the public hold federal agencies accountable for settlements they make with corporate wrongdoers. When companies break the law, federal enforcement agencies are responsible for holding them accountable. In nearly every instance, agencies choose to resolve cases through settlements rather than a public trial. They defend this practice by arguing that settlements are in the best interests of the American people. And that sounds good, but their actions paint a very different picture. If agencies were truly confident that these settlements were good deals for the public, they would be willing to disclose publicly all of the key details of those agreements. Instead, time after time, agencies do the opposite, hiding critical details about their settlements in the fine print, or worse, hiding them entirely from public view. Consider copies of these agreements, or even basic facts about them, are not easily accessible online. Many agencies regularly deem agreements confidential without any public explanation of why the public can't see what's been done in their name. And when agencies do make public statements about these agreements, they often trumpet large dollar amounts of money recovered for taxpayers, while failing to disclose that this sticker price isn't what the companies will actually pay, since the number that's listed includes credits for engaging in routine activities and doesn't reflect massive tax deductions that many of these companies get. Add up all of these tricks and you'll end up with a predictable result. Too often, the American people learn only what the agencies want them to learn about these agreements. That is not good enough. These hidden details can make a huge difference. Below the surface, settlements that seem tough and fair don't always look so impressive. For example, 2 years ago, federal regulators entered into a settlement with 10 mortgage servicers accused of illegal foreclosure practices. The sticker price on the settlement was $8.5 billion. Now, that is a big number. But $5.2 billion was in the form of credits for what the agencies described in their press release as, quote, loan modifications and forgiveness of deficiency judgments. That vague public statement left out a key detail. Servicers could rack up those credits by forgiving mere fractions of large unpaid loans. For example, a servicer that wrote down $15,000 of a $500,000 unpaid loan balance would get a credit for $500,000, not the $15,000 that was actually written down. That undisclosed method of calculating credits could end up cutting the overall value of the $8.5 billion settlement by billions and billions of dollars. Failure to disclose possible tax deductions is another way agencies can hide the ball. 2 years ago, a federal court found that a company allegedly defrauded Medicare and other federal health programs for years was entitled to a $50 million tax deduction for government settlements that it had made. That deduction came on top of earlier tax deductions the company had already taken in their settlement payment. The end result? A $385 million settlement that was touted at the time as the largest civil recovery to date in a healthcare fraud case was in fact $100 million smaller once taxpayers had picked up part of the settlement. At least in these two cases, the text of the settlements was public, allowing the American people the chance to dig into the fine print and uncover these unflattering details. But for settlements that are kept confidential, the public is kept entirely in the dark. Recently, Wells Fargo agreed to pay the Federal Housing Finance Agency $335 million for allegedly fraudulent sales of mortgage-backed securities to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's about 6% of what J.P. Morgan Chase paid in a public settlement with FHFA to address very similar claims. Now, in what ways did the actions of Wells Fargo differ from those of J.P. Morgan? We'll never know, because while the J.P. Morgan settlement is public, the much smaller Wells Fargo settlement is held confidential. The American people deserve better. These enforcement agencies don't work for the companies they investigate. They work for us. Agencies should not be able to cut bad deals and then hide the embarrassing details. The public deserves transparency. The Truth in Settlements Act requires that transparency. It requires agencies making public statements about their settlements to include explanations of how those settlements are categorized for tax purposes and what specific conduct will generate credits that apply toward the sticker price. The bill also requires agencies to post text and basic information about their settlements online. And while the legislation does not prohibit agencies from deeming settlements confidential, it requires agencies to disclose additional information about how frequently they are invoking confidentiality and their reasons for doing so. If we expect agencies to hold companies accountable for breaking the law, then we should be able to hold agencies accountable for enforcing the law. If we can't, and we can't do that if we're being held in the dark. The Truth in Settlements Act shines a light on these agency decisions and gives the American people a chance to hold agencies accountable for enforcing our laws. I introduced this bill in the last Congress with Senator Lankford's predecessor, Senator Coburn. The bill advanced through the Senate's Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee by voice vote, but was blocked on the Senate floor. I hope that in this Congress, we can finally make this common sense legislation law. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Just keep in mind, I believe all of us would appreciate the opportunity to have these not go to settlement, but rather go to trial, so all the discovery and all of the information about what they engaged in, who was involved, when did they know that, let's say, a drug was toxic. Who knew that the drug was toxic? The scientists would have known. Did the doctors researching it know? Did the members of the board of directors know? Did the officers of the corporation, did the legal counsel of the corporation know? Because if we saw that there was systemic malfeasance at every level of the decision-making process, then we could collectively boycott that entire corporation and all of its products, and then go to their homes and go to their synagogues and go to their churches and go to where they socialize and boycott them. Hold up posters saying, you intentionally allow people to die or become injured out of greed. But if we don't have that information, then we don't know who's responsible. They pay a fine, make more money, and go on with it. It's time that this insane way of jurisprudence was changed. Those are my thoughts. Now let's go over to our guest who is standing by. Richard Heinberg is a widely regarded world expert on peak oil and its repercussions on world economy, food and transportation, and the need to transition away from fossil fuels and create a more sustainable future. He is currently the senior fellow at the Post-Carbon Institute. He was featured in Leonardo DiCaprio's film, The 11th Hour, and he is also the author of Afterburn, Society Beyond Fossil Fuels. His websites are Richard Heinberg, HEINGBERG.com, and postcarbon.org. Nice to have you with us today, Richard.
It's great to be speaking with you again, Gary.
Richard, there is an article in the Oil Price blog today stating that shale gas is now becoming the dot-com bubble of the 21st century. The upshot was that one of the largest shale gas producers, Whiting Petroleum, expects to earn $850 million from operations. However, they will need to spend $2 billion to do it. Well, that's insane. And they call this growth. I mean, how in the hell can someone say, isn't it great we just made we're going to make $850 million? Yeah, but we got to spend $2 billion to do it. No matter how you cut it, you're losing $2.2 billion. In any case, many of us have felt that the gas exploration deals are either Ponzi schemes or bubbles. The people at the beginning who get the syndicated money are in it. They get their money, they get out, or at least are protected. Later people are going to get creamed because the price of natural gas is not going to go high enough to be sustainable, and these wells go dry very quickly, frequently within 1 to 2 years. And the world is not aware of how big of bubbles they are. So tell us the problems with the whole gas hydrofracking mess that's out there now.
Right. Yeah. Well, this what I'm going to say applies also to tight oil, which is also produced by hydrofracturing, mostly in North Dakota and South Texas. The problem with these resources is that the rocks that the gas and oil are locked in have very low permeability, and that's why the technology of hydrofracturing and horizontal drilling have been adapted to producing this stuff. It's because without that technology, it just wouldn't be able to come out of the ground. But that entails very high production costs, and even with hydrofracturing, only so much of the resource can be recovered, and that's why the wells deplete very rapidly, as you say. According to our research, the average tight oil or shale gas well declines in production by about 70% within the first year of well completion. So that means that tens of thousands of these wells have to be drilled. That's expensive business. And most of the companies that specialize in drilling and fracking shale gas and tight oil wells are heavily in debt and have depended upon ultra-low interest rates in order to acquire and maintain the debt that they have. And with very low natural gas prices and the current low oil prices, almost none of these companies are making money on actual production of product. They have to continually lure in new investors. They have to sell off assets in the form of drilling leases, just in order to stay in business. This is the dot-com bubble of our time, and it's going bust.
Well, I think that, well, good, not fast enough for me.
Yeah.
All right. Look, an investor investing in something that is polluting the world, contributing to global warming, destroying people's water, quality of air, that has secret chemicals that no investor even knows how bad these chemicals are, where they bought the legislators and controlled it through Cheney when he originally was working on the energy platform. All this is just so toxic. So, you know, these people...
And it's very short term. Within the very large geographic areas where these resources exist, there are only very small core areas, usually a county or two or three counties, let's say within the Marcellus play in Pennsylvania or the Eagle Ford in South Texas or the Bakken in North Dakota, only a few counties where production is prolific enough to even justify drilling on any scale. And those small core areas are being drilled out very rapidly. So even if prices were higher, this bubble would last only another couple of years at best before production starts to decline. As it is with current low prices, especially for oil, what we're seeing is drilling rigs being idled by the score every month. And U.S. oil production has already started declining just since oil prices themselves started declining about 8 months ago. So we are seeing the bursting the bubble in real time. It's just it hasn't really caught up with the industry yet because the companies that specialize are doing everything they can to slash costs, lay off workers, and cannibalize their own assets in order to stay in business. But by the end of the year, I think we will have seen some pretty serious carnage within the industry.
While there will always be fossil fuels to burn, what we now know is that the easily accessible hydrocarbon resources are dwindling dramatically. And eventually, while there will still be oil, it will be exceedingly expensive to exploit and unable to meet our current energy needs. Like, there's always going to be water in California, but there's going to not be water for everyone and all the needs in California. So there's going to be a whole lot of people who are not going to have the water they need in California unless you're very rich, a major corporation. Then you'll be able to afford it. What will the likely scenario be for oil in the United States, since we're looking at economic booms and busts? They're closely connected with oil supply and prices. We're looking at lower oil prices. Give us your overall assessment of what we're about to see, what we are seeing, and the likely outcome in the next 2 years.
Well, what we're seeing is a divergence between the costs of production and the price that society can afford to pay in terms of oil. In inflation-adjusted terms, we would like to be paying something like $40, $30 a barrel, something in that range. That's the historic normal price of oil. And oil is the most important commodity for modern industrial societies. It's virtually all of our transport fuel, and transportation is what makes trade happen. So with cheap transport fuel, we get more trade and more economic growth. With expensive transport fuel, the gears of the economy start to seize up. Well, the costs of oil production are increasing as we deplete the affordably produced oils that fueled the 20th century. Today, the only growth in the oil sector is in unconventional oils like the tar sands of Canada, the tight oil of the United States, which we are talking about, and in ultra-deep water oil, including polar oil, which is a smaller category. So if that's where the only growth lies, these are high-cost alternatives, and that means that the added marginal barrel, if you want to bring new supplies online, that's going to cost a lot more. The oil industry needs prices in the range of $100 to $120 a barrel, which is where they were for a few years between 2010 and early part of 2014. But society can't afford to pay $100 a barrel and still have economic growth. So there's no overlap between those price ranges. There's no Goldilocks price for oil where everyone is happy, where producers can continue to increase their rate of production and where consumers can afford to use more. And that's a fundamental change in not just in the oil industry, but in our whole energy and transport infrastructure that is not being discussed, not being widely understood. It's going to have enormous repercussions going forward because it really will challenge the whole basis of our consumer globalized economic regime.
Okay, well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing these insights with us, Richard. Thank you very much. Again, there will always be oil. Let's be clear about that. But there's not always going to be the easy finding oil, the inexpensive oil. And with the unsettling situation in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia is making a really good play, smart on their part, because they have about $900 billion in oil reserve. So they can weather the storm. They can go to a lower price. Other countries and other suppliers can't. So there's going to be a lot of consolidation or people going out of business. Then we'll see what happens to the price of oil. And of course, if there should be an attack against Iran, then say goodbye to cheap oil, because when they mine the Straits of Hormuz and oil tankers cannot get through, the price of oil could go to $300 a barrel overnight, and would because of people exploiting it. So we'll see what happens. We'll keep you in the loop.
We certainly live in interesting times, don't we, Gary?
Sure do, Richard. Thanks a lot for your good work out there.
Yeah,
Richard,
thank you.
Richard Heinberg from Santa Rosa, California. We're out of time. And by the way, the station I was on out there in the debate was KSCO, and it's now posted in our archives at GaryNoll.com and PRN.fm, so you can listen to it. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Boy, it's been a long time. We just got done with a phenomenal retreat with such great people, and I am just loaded with emails here. I have one from someone named Jeremy, and apparently he heard you lecture somewhere. He says he was watching you on Skype, and he says, of all the things you have and do, is there any part of your being that is incomplete? I ask because you seem like you have it all. I try to do as much as I can to live an honest, good life. Yet, I have an ache. I feel incomplete and empty. He says, I have a good diet. I don't use drugs or alcohol. I work hard. I'm part of social issues groups, and I care about other people. I'm sure there are others out there. I have friends that really don't care about anything. They're selfish, could care less about the environment or politics, and they're really not up to date on social issues. Yet, they seem happy to me. So he's asking you for any insights on that.
All right. Well, I believe all of us have to come to grips with what we believe happiness is. And our core being should radiate a spiritual energy that allows us to be happy no matter what crisis we're going through. It doesn't mean we have to feel good about something, but it means that we're not going to lose our values, our character, our moral compass, our sense of purpose and dignity because of the crisis or the problems or the confrontations or how people feel about us. It was George Bernard Shaw who said we have no more right to consume happiness without producing it than we consume wealth without producing it. So what we have is we have a lot of people who feel as long as they work towards something, then that something should give them happiness. If I work towards a relationship, I'll find happiness in my relationship. If I work towards an apartment, a co-op, a summer rental, a new car, I'll find happiness. And that's where our energy is. And none of those produce happiness. The objects we consider happy times are not. They're merely objects. They're transient. They have no intrinsic value. What it does have intrinsic value is being grounded into your own spiritual self, where each day you wake up and you don't have to accept anyone else's stories or nonsense. And one of the reasons that I'm able to maintain my sense of self is because some time ago I stopped trying to help people who had the game of needing to be rescued, but then created the drama inside that rescue so that neither they would grow and everyone else would distract their time. Well, the only thing you have is time, and the older you get, the more you value it. So I value time and what I do with it. Even if I choose to do nothing with it, I'm not going to give it away to negative or toxic people. So I have a simple rule. He says he has friends who are selfish and not nice people. I don't. I would rather not have a friend than to have one that does not meet my basic concept of true friendship. I couldn't have a racist as a friend. I couldn't have a hate monger as a friend. I couldn't have an inherently selfish person, which I've had in my life, as friends. These are the people that will never pick up a check, even if they could. And then I've had other people who are my friends, who are giving, caring, and loving. There's no drama. Always look for the drama. And also, I don't allow people in my life who don't know how to apologize or say they're sorry, and then look at the mistakes they've made and how. I believe those can be forgiven. But what we have is something that I haven't seen in my history before, but I'm seeing a lot of it today in people. People who are so self-righteous in their indignities that they do not see that they're ever wrong. They look at finding an excuse to blame someone else for what's wrong in their life. And hence, everywhere they go, I call them the spitting cobras. No matter how many times a spitting cobra spits, it never spits out its venom. It reproduces it instantly. So these people could rake on you, they could scream, they could yell, they could condemn, they could point their finger, shake their hand, shake their hips, and the next moment they're doing it again, and forever. And just be thankful that you're no longer in those people's presence when you say goodbye to them. It doesn't matter about having the world like you or love you or appreciate you. It's a matter that you love and like and appreciate yourself, because you have to be your best friend. And if you're blessed by having other people in your life who can align their energies and synchronize with you, then you're indeed double blessed. And that's where we have to put ourselves. And out of the life of drama. If someone's got drama, let them put on a play and charge people for it. Okay, Luann?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Now, let's see if we have Eutrice lead on. I've been waiting to see if she's on or not. Eutrice, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hi, Gary. Today, it is Free Your Mind Friday, and listeners have their say.
Eutrice lead right now.